Like a wayward Santa for the Christmas-obsessed legendary filmmaker and raconteur John Waters, best known for Pink Flamingos, Hairspray, and A Dirty Shame, rides into town on his sleigh, spreading Yuletide cheer with his critically acclaimed one-man show, A John Waters Christmas. It's a rapid-fire monologue which explores and explodes traditional archetypes as he shares his compulsive desire to give and receive perverted gifts, a religious fanaticism for Santa Claus, and an unhealthy love of true crime holiday horror stories. It takes place on Sunday, December 2nd at 8 o'clock at The Egg, and it's a great pleasure to welcome John Waters to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I wrote that press release. I hadn't heard it in a long time, but it's pretty true.
It is. When it comes to the show, what were you looking to accomplish?
I'm trying to get everybody through a highly emotional time of the year. Whether you love Christmas, whether it makes you crazy, go broke, everybody has it. You can't not react to Christmas. You can't ignore it. So don't even try. And if you're planning to, come to see my show and I'll tell you how to get through it. Even if you love it, if you hate it, if you're sexually aroused by it, if you're a burglar, if you're big in charity, it's about what to give people, what I want for Christmas, what not to give, how to get through it with your parents. I think it covers every aspect.
Is this the first year you've done it, or have you been doing this for a while?
Oh my God, I've been doing it for at least 10 years. It probably started out when I wrote a chapter in my book, Crackpot, called Why I Love Christmas. And then the Castro Theater asked me, promoter there asked me to do it at the Castro, and I did it there. And then it's become kind of a tradition. I've been doing it for many, many years. And I always update it. I always change it, but I keep it up to date. But it is completely written and rehearsed, and it's a complete 70-minute monologue with no notes. I'm up there without a safety net.
Well, when you say written, you don't deviate from that. You have it in your mind of what you're going to say next.
It is totally written, every word of it. It's like doing a one-man play.
And is
only there's no other actors to whisper you the lines if you forget. Now, the question and answer period is obviously, not planned because you don't know what people are going to ask.
And what do they ask you? Yeah, I can only imagine.
The most astonishing one, well, believe me, plenty. I've signed every possible body part. But I think the funniest one recently was in New York, and I was playing this nightclub, and this nice straight guy in the audience asked, he said, "Look, I'm just here with my girlfriend, but I just realized I've never kissed a man. Can I come up and kiss you?" And I was so startled, I said, "Yeah." And he did, and the audience went crazy, and it was pretty funny. But then other people asked, I said, "Oh, no, this isn't a kissing booth. Let's end this right here." But that surprised me. And in San Francisco one time, someone was waiting in line at the book signing nude, and nobody said anything. And it's legal to be nude in San Francisco now. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes,
no.
You can walk around nude, which I find funny because everyone that does it usually looks hideous. Why is that? You'd think cute people would, but they never are.
No. And when you draw that type to your show, you revel in that, it seems.
These are regular, this could be your kid that's doing this, you know. They aren't so strange. Everywhere I go in the world, and I just did this show last week in Helsinki, not the Christmas show, but my other show, This Filthy World. The internet has made everybody the same in a way. There's cool kids everywhere. Nobody has to leave Albany to see movies or to see rock groups. I mean, they go online. You can see, you don't have to go to New York. You don't have to go to L.A. When I was young, you had to leave Baltimore to go to those, to see movies and stuff. And now it's completely different. Everywhere's cool. Everybody's cool everywhere.
At least
the ones that come to see me.
When did your love affair with Christmas begin? Was this something as a child?
Well, when the Christmas tree fell over on my grandmother, which did happen, and I've used that imagery exaggerated ad nauseum, especially in Female Trouble. There's a scene where Divine knocks over the Christmas tree on her mother. Now, this was not a violent act, and even my grandmother thought it was funny later that we talked about it so much. But I think that's when I realized the emotional distress and lunacy that can happen at Christmas, and what was so exciting when I heard when I heard Clarence, the handyman, running, when I heard the thought of her hitting the presents, which me as a selfish child thinking, I hope it's not mine. I hope nothing broke. But, I mean, she wasn't injured or anything. It wasn't like she was taken away on a stretcher.
As you said at the very beginning, that the show helps people get through this time. What is there about the holiday season that is so difficult that makes it something that you have to get through, given the fact that, assuming most of us who've been around for a while, have lived through a lot of them?
Because it's emotional and financial pressure put together, which can produce all sorts of mental illness and neuroses. And you have to deal with your family. And it's a tough time. People can be crazy. I have Cookie Muller, a friend of mine. She used to come home for Christmas, and her mother would say to her, "You have to stand up when you open your presents. No wonder you don't have any money. You're lazy." Well, that's insane. But people's behavior at Christmas is insane, and they don't even realize it.
And we sort of all fall into that trap, one shape or form, no matter what our religious background or how we feel about Christmas.
I agree. You can't escape it. And I understand for people that aren't Christian why they go crazy about it. So, to me, that's why I design a Christmas card every year, and I have for 20 years, 40 years, actually. But I certainly say season's greetings, which can mean anything. It can mean anything. I realize, though, that no matter what religion you are, you cannot ignore it. And even if you're, you know, an atheist, I mean, the Christmas tree was not a religious symbol.
Nor Santa.
Yeah. No. And in some countries, in Norway, Santa was a villain. So I like, you know, in some countries, religious countries, though, they think that Jesus makes the toys and Santa delivers them.
But you like...
So I talk about all this. It's complicated.
But
and the scariest thing to me of all is living creches.
Why do you find that so scary?
I just, well, there's hay there, and those mules can kick your children, and the people look insane. It's like a bad Diana Arbus picture. I always go to them and sit in the car like such a pervert.
And just watch it from afar?
Yeah, I'm watching it and marveling at it.
Live animals and children. It is a good mix.
Well, and hay, and they could catch fires. Don't put your child in some... bathonet and a hay-filled thing with candles around, a mule that could kick him.
Tell us a little bit about your, as I read in the introduction, your fanaticism for Santa Claus.
Well, I'm curious about Santa Claus. I mean, now everybody's so health conscious, I'm surprised someone hasn't pushed for a thinner Santa Claus. Is Santa erotic to people, to chubby chasers he would be? In the bear community, is Santa a polar bear? I mean, there's lots of questioning you have to do about sitting on a man's lap.
Have you come to terms with that? Or
I have. I certainly think the cruelest, most rudest thing you can ever do is ask an overweight friend to play Santa Claus at your office party. That is the most insulting thing you could do. Never do that.
And they always say, "Oh, you're perfect for it, and you fit the costume."
Exactly.
Not that
so rude. Well, I think it's rude to say to people that were once fat, "God, you look great." That means you look so ugly before. I always tell fat people that lost a lot of weight, "You look good, fat too."
And that the imagery that we have of Santa as that jolly old elf, and he really isn't, you know, obviously an elf.
Well, have you seen my Christmas card that was flashed with the promotion for this story? It's Santa holding the Easter Bunny that he shot. I think the Easter Bunny tries to seize Santa's title very unsatisfactorily.
When you look at how this fits into your work, obviously we know you as a filmmaker, and for you to get up on stage and to tell a story for an hour and a half, is that enjoyable for you, that acting part coming
well,
out of you?
It's not really acting. I'm playing myself, and that is much easier for me than playing a role, which I wrote my dialogue. I have no problems memorizing dialogue I've written. I always have problems memorizing dialogue that someone else wrote. I'm telling a story, the same thing I do when I make a movie, the same thing I do when I write a book, which I'm doing right now, same thing I do here. I just need a way to tell stories, and this is a good way to do it. I come out on stage and do it, and it's all rehearsed. It's all there. But, I mean, it's amazing because when you do a show like that, usually with the lighting, you can just see black. You can't really see the audience until the question and answers comes up. But it's been great because I've learned over the years. I've been doing it for so long. Sometimes I get a standing ovation when I come out, and I think, wait a minute, that's because I'm old. I didn't say anything yet.
But also the people who come like you. They want
yes,
to see
but,
you.
But still, but, but you know, at the end, if I'm lucky enough to get one, but before, it means somehow you're still doing this. And my sister said to me, how do you get away with saying some of that stuff? And it's true. No one ever gets mad at anything I say anymore because it's never really mean. It might be perverse. It might be sickening. It might be weird. But I'm fascinated by that. I'm not mean about it.
Was there a time when it did bother you that people took it?
Oh, no, the beginning. Are you kidding? Like, censorship is your best friend in the beginning. when it gets you so much publicity, when you get busted. And the best review I ever got was when I sent a film of mine, Multiple Maniacs, to Ontario, Canada, to get a ruling, and it never came back. And finally I called, and Custom sent me a form that just said, destroyed. I thought, well, I guess you didn't care for it? I mean, you know, I should have just had that as the blurb.
And that you live for, right? I mean, to have
then,
that type of...
Then, that could never happen today.
Yeah.
In 1967 and 8, there was a cultural war going on. People actually believed the revolution was going to happen. Today, all film critics are hip. They wouldn't be that stupid to give you the kind of quotes that Rex Reed gave us, which were like, where do these people come? Where do they go when the sun goes down? Isn't there a law or something? You know, nobody would give us those great blurbs. Pink Flamingos, the entire campaign was based on negative reviews.
And now, who would scare people more, Rex Reed or you?
Well, you never answer your critics. That's something I learned a long time ago. And all reviews, you read them all once, read the good ones twice, the bad ones once, and put them all away and never look at them again.
When you look at your career, what are you proud of that you've accomplished?
I'm proud of I've been able to do it for all this time. I've been understood. My dreams came true a long time ago. This is gravy. It's been a really good career. I get to have many careers, and I can hop from one to another. I've never had to get a real job, but I certainly think that my hours are much longer than a 40-hour week. But I'm lucky because I jump out of bed every morning at 6 o'clock ready to go. I like my career. I like my job.
Well, John Waters will be coming to the Egg in Albany. Have you ever performed in an Egg?
You know, that sounds familiar. I don't know. I mean, because I've been doing this for 40 years, not only the Christmas show, but my other show. So
yeah.
I don't know if I played there or not. What is it?
It's an egg-like theater. When you look at when you come into the city, it looks like an egg on a pedestal.
I might have. I don't know. I get mixed up because of Edith Massey.
Well, a John Waters Christmas is coming to the Egg Sunday, December 2nd at 8 o'clock. John Waters, it's a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. I hope I see you there.
Indeed. A great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.